You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, brought to you by Full Sneak Gear. Check out their entire lineup at fullsneakgear.com. Also, be sure to check out our entire stable of podcasts at sportsmansempire.com. New from Moultrie Mobile, the Feed Hub offers first-of-its-kind cellular connection and control for nearly any spin cast feeder on the market. When used with the Moultrie Mobile app, you can monitor feed and battery levels, run feeders on demand, receive alerts when feeders are clogged, and remotely adjust feeding times. The Feed Hub is ideal for anyone who maintains feeders. Remove the guesswork and save time by planning feeder maintenance before you drive to your hunting property. For more information, visit MoultrieMobile.com.
Welcome to the Antler Up Podcast, brought to you by Tethered, the world's best saddle hunting gear, and we got a great show for you all today. What's up, everybody? Welcome back to this week's episode of the Antler Up Podcast. We're on episode 221, and I was joined this week by Larry McCoy from Respect the Game TV, as well as from the Outdoor Group, which is involved with, you name it, from Elite, Ultra Arrow, CBE, Slick Trick, and so forth and so forth. And you'll see Larry, obviously, not only on TV, but as well on social media. Man, the guy just creates some amazing things, and there's some really cool takeaways that I learned through this episode with talking to Larry, because he's been doing it for so long and he's really good at what he's doing. But it's just awesome to hear just his passion for hunting and what the outdoor world has provided for him and family members and his friends and things along those lines. But we really, it's actually fascinating to hear, because going from, and I know Larry has done a ton of this over the last couple of years, and he's kind of mastered, is getting there as far as like decoying whitetails and just some really cool footage he's gotten over the last couple of years. And this past year at the Iowa Deer Classic, he had the opportunity to go ahead and present for a seminar regarding that. So we hear a little bit about that aspect of things, but then we kind of peel the onion back of who Larry is. And it's just fascinating to hear that, like, originally it started with the Heartland Bowhunter and how he's trying to has grown into that. And now this year going on 14 seasons with filming Respect the Game TV. And so we talk about like some things as far as like how it's changed over the last couple of years, like doing as far as like self-filming, different style of hunting, along those things. And then we talk about some spring hunts. We talk about some, his bow setup, and just a fun conversation, just diving into kind of the world of hunting and who Larry is, and just one of the top-notch guys there is out there that, again, that's been doing it for so long. A lot of respect for him, because, man, this stuff is not easy when it comes to filming and really been doing it at a high level for such a long time. So some fun stories regarding hunting, how he's got started, where he's at, and where he plans on going with it. So I hope you enjoy this one, and we'll see you next week. Antler up. And one more thing while I have your attention, turkey season is right around the corner. And if you are in the market for a new vest or, heck, even a new modular system while scouting, then I think you should check out the Tethered M2 vest. This thing is the epitome of functionality, designed with military precision and really the hunting public's turkey experience and expertise. The M2 is a lightweight, quiet, and nimble, featuring whisper tough technology. Really, the key to this piece of gear is how modular it really is. You can customize it to your style with MOLLE capability. Proudly made in the USA, the M2 comes in mossy oak bottomland camo pattern. And get yours now and choose between the expandable bird bag or the hydration pack, or grab both for the ultimate versatility. Elevate your hunt with the Tethered M2 vest, where quality meets speed. Visit tethernation.com and gear up for success. Welcome back, everybody, to this week's episode of the Antler Up Podcast. I'm joined by the legend himself. I got Larry McCoy on from Respect the Game TV show and online production. Also, he's the marketing and media director for the Outdoor Group. So that's companies such as Elite Archery. We got Ultra Arrows. We got Slick Trick and so on and so on. So, Larry, it's a great pleasure to have you on the show. Someone I respect, someone I look up to. So thanks, man, for taking the time to do this.
Well, thanks for having me. It's been like I said, we've been trying to get this scheduled for a while, and thanks again for having me on. I truly appreciate you asking me to come on, and always happy to get on here and talk some hunting and pretty much anything about the outdoors.
Awesome, Larry. I appreciate it. So, like, let's do this. You had a long heck of a season. I'm sure part two now of next year's already rolling, getting ready for spring and doing along those lines for some turkey hunts. And you're traveling, probably shooting some things for target archery stuff going on with the Elite. So right now, are you feeling a little like you getting energized again of like, man, turkey season's right around the corner for certain states. Are you getting amped up right now?
Yeah, I never quit getting amped up, to be honest with you. It's just, I love it so much. It's just from behind the lens and front of the lens, out hunting and doing that. I just love it all. You know, getting to talk to other outdoor enthusiasts and, you know, learning from them and as well. I mean, really kind of segued a true passion for everything outdoors, and just whether it be 3D archery, target archery, all the way into the hunting side and even the filming side.
Yeah. I like that. So here's one question that I have for you, because we talked about a week and a half ago on the phone for just briefly, and you mentioned going out to the Iowa Deer Classic, and I've worked and have gone to the Pennsylvania Harrisburg Outdoor Show since I was a little kid, always did that, and I would love to one day make it out to Iowa for that one. And you mentioned that you had a little seminar out there. What seminar did you do that you were asked to give?
So actually the seminars that I did out there was over a deer decoy setup and stuff. If you follow Respect the Game, the show and any of our social media at all, you know that I've kind of got a little passion for hunting over a deer decoy, whether it's to the hunt. And, you know, and there's been a lot of times where it's, you know, worked great. And there's been other times where it hadn't. And through the times I hadn't, you know, I try to take, you know, what went wrong, you know, out, and I started to notice some, you know, more and more positive encounters with deer and the decoy, all the way down to the way it's set up based upon the terrain and the area you're hunting. So they called and asked me to do some seminars on that, and totally pleased, had a really good turnout, and love to do those seminars, just because, you know, it gives me an opportunity to talk to other people. They ask questions, and I get to ask questions to them as well, and learn from them, whether they've tried it. And there's usually two things. One, I don't want to pack all that stuff in, or two, I'm afraid of blowing my hunt.
Right.
And so we address all that stuff through the seminar, and we had a really good turnout and seemed to get a lot of positive response for it. So I was really happy. And that Deer Classics is a show that I look forward to every year, because there's such a good turnout. You get to see some giant deer walking through, people coming in, bringing their racks in to get them scored. And just, you know, it's just really a good event.
I'll tell you what, the one video that you guys had this past fall with the decoying stuff, oh my gosh, where that buck came in and just trashed that one, man, it just, some of the footage was just so freaking cool and just remarkable to see, and just so neat to just, when you are able to slow it down and you see the muscles in the buck, and oh man, it's just, that was a really cool video you did.
Yeah, well thanks. Yeah, because that was another part of that seminar. We actually used the piece of that hunt as an example of kind of being versatile, and there was no place based upon the wind to set up, so we literally just dug into a little cedar tree out in the middle of a pasture and set it up, and you know, having that deer, it work out versatile, because the stand was 200 yards and we were going in there to hunt, and realized real quick that, oh man, this isn't going to work out at all. And we, you know, so we just made a decision, moved, and it worked out. And I mean, it was a really good deer, and I ended up not shooting the deer, because, you know, kind of where we were at, they really practiced some quality deer management, but I could tell you anywhere else, I probably would have been sending one. It was tough, but I was staying entertained, so I really wasn't thinking about it whenever he was coming in, because it was just so fun to watch.
Yep, no doubt.
How they respond and how they react, and so it's those encounters like that. And like I said, a positive encounter. You hear me say that a lot with a decoy. It may be a young buck coming into the decoy, and that's, to me, that's a positive encounter. Like I said, I love it all, whether it's a young deer and I learn from how they act and how they respond to the decoy, how they respond to my calling, in relationship to the decoy being there. And so that one right there was just one that you couldn't think of, you know, unfolding better in your head, you know, just like it was like.
When it comes to Decoin, just because I've never really had the opportunity to do it, are all decoys the same, or man, you got to have a good one? Because obviously the same thing goes for in the turkey woods, right? Like you have some of those, man, you got some really nice ones that are pricey. Is the same goes for a whitetail?
Yeah, I mean, it's always better to have, you know, kind of one that's going to look the part, mm-hmm. to say, but I have seen, I've done it over just a 3D target and it worked, and I've seen it not, but I mean, I use the DSD decoys, mm-hmm. And yes, they are a lot more pricey, but I've also seen the results from it as well. Setting decoys up or find if you're going to try decoy hunting, one is making sure that you have visibility. Mm-hmm. The deer have to see it from a little bit of this so they can get comfortable and size the decoy up. Two is you have to create space all the way around the decoy. And what I mean by that is that may be the decoy has to be set up at 30. If they come over the hill and they just see a decoy versus just getting more and more comfortable as they're working towards a decoy, realizing that there's space all the way around. Mm-hmm. And then too, a lot of people, the old wise tale when it comes to any decoys, you've got to put them facing you because they're always going to go their head. Well, I mentioned a lot of my, I'm not going to say failures, but times whenever the decoys didn't work out, mm-hmm. I had that and I started noticing that the ones that were coming in, they were circling around, number one, getting their wind right so they can use everything to their advantage. And two, they were going to the butt side of the decoy. Because you got to think, they're usually deer. You got about 2 to 3 days of every season where a buck's attitude is going to be to the point where I don't want to tolerate any other buck.
Yep.
And you got to know that going into it. Having a show, one of the hardest parts is because we're going to show some of those more successful times, like the one that smashed him and so on, not the ones that are just kind of tiptoeing up to it, just to kind of stick their nose out and smell it. So, and most of the time they come to the head. So I usually put the decoy kind of quartered, mm-hmm. a little bit away, vice versa, either this way or this way. Two, because it opens up more shot opportunity for the deer to be broadside. And because if they come to the back or decide to come to the head, if you do have a real aggressive one, you're going to get a broadside shot at some point. If you have them directly facing you or broadside, a lot of times I've shot myself in the foot because now the decoy is in between me and the deer. Mm-hmm. And I've got to try to either shoot over the decoy or around the decoy if they try to come in to get to that, you know, to either go to the butt of the decoy or the head, versus having to circle around and come in between you and the decoy to present a shot.
Yeah, that's there. There's a science, man. And like you said, the more you do it is just the more experience you're going to get doing and seeing. And like you said, not necessarily failures, but just times where you're just like, man, that one, it cost me that one just because the way you had them set up. And I mean, too, the more times you even practice doing it with turkey and along those lines, it's just going to help you understand that even better in the whitetail woods as well.
For sure. And when they get it fixed on the decoy, they're doing everything they can to get the wind to their advantage because they're literally going up there to look for a fight in a lot of cases, or mm-hmm. check to see what deer this is on my property. And so having everything in your favor is definitely key, or doing the best you can. And that doesn't necessarily mean you have to have the decoy. You don't have to be sitting right on the X where all these trails come together. And I know a lot of your listeners may really resonate with them because I've did this several times and made the wrong choice by doing this. So if you have a set and you've got your shooting lane, I've got one wide shooting lane that's there, but I'm on the X. This is where the deer always come through. Right. This is it. It'd be a great spot to decoy. You're naturally going to put that decoy right in the middle of your shooting lane. And most of the time, if you see deer, a lot of times they're going to stop short of that decoy. And most generally, they're going to stop outside of your shooting lane, and then they're going to side and walk to one side or the other, and you just hooped yourself. So if you set it on, try to predict, and it's your best educated guess on which way the deer are going to come from, settle on the side of that. So that way, when they stop to look at the decoy, they're in your shooting lane. And once I start thinking like that, you may not be able to see the decoy as well, but as long as the deer can, it may benefit you because they may stop in your lane versus outside of your lane and come. Because me making that mistake several times, I'm like, oh man, this is a good deer coming, good deer. And he stops around the edge, no shot. And you're sitting there, okay, he's going to come. And then he turns around, tries to skirt, and then crosses way up there and you don't have a shot. And it's like, man, so just thinking about those little things. And I always say in a lot of other podcasts and other seminars is knowing your property and knowing will help you when it comes to hunting a decoy or hunting in general. And not only just paying attention to the details, but paying attention to the details of the details. Mm-hmm. And what I mean by that is if you're setting up in a tree because you've killed deer there, back in the past, because you've hunted this piece of property for 25 years and you killed this deer, you've killed 15 deer out of this set over the last 25 years. Well, something may change through your property. An oak tree may have fell on the fence where they used to cross. So now it changed. So now their travel pattern may be a little bit different than what it was the year before. And I've seen it so many times that if I'm sitting on a food source and I see deer are just, they're coming out on the far corner of the field. And I look, it's like, all right, well, they're coming out over there. Well, I go back there, guess what? They're doing the same thing. And then I go back there doing the same thing. Well, first thing you want to do is what's the wind doing? Are the deer going to do the same thing with a different wind? And how is that wind going to affect where you're sitting? Or if the wind's going to stay the same, I'm going to either continue to sit there and watch deer,
right,
or I'm going to move in and try to make something happen. Because you don't know if that oak tree fell on fence or fell over the trail or whatever the case may be. All I know is if you know more about the property around you, and going in there, it's going to make you a better hunter of that property. You're going to learn how the deer navigate your property. It's no different if you know that the property around you, you've got 100 acres of corn and 200 acres of beans on both sides of you. I'm not sure that you really want to plant corn or beans on your property if you're going to plant a food plot.
Right.
You may want to go to a brassica, something with a variety, because now you can actually create the hub where the deer wants to be so he can stage up before he goes out to that major food source.
Right. Yeah. So, man, that's all good details, dude. Oh my gosh. Well, and that's the aspect of, I might have to be in touch with you because this year for the upcoming year, I'll be coming up north to New York, me and three of our other buddies. We finally got a piece of ground up there that we are going to be hunting and spending some time in and checking things out. And we have another neighboring piece where it is a little bit of ag to it, which we're kind of excited about. And I might be in touch about some decoying stuff and just seeing how good of a property this will set up with. And man, we're pumped to try that. And I just love anytime I have a guest on, or just like you said, talking to people that are just passionate, love talking about hunting, when someone is so involved and so into a specific topic. And that's why I know pretty much nothing about decoying, let alone decoying whitetail. That's why I was like, I got to ask Larry about this. Yep. Because I'm so intrigued, because man, some of those videos are just so awesome to see. And like you said, I know I've heard the stories of where people are like, oh, I don't decoy because like you said, I don't want it to mess up my hunt or things along those lines. And there is a science to it, right? Like it's just, we evolve. And that was like, we'll get into that. And that's the one aspect too, because of how successful you've been for over the years. I wanted to ask like how we have evolved as for where we're at right now with hunting and along those lines and where we're going with it. But man, I really like some of those tips, because you could even use that to, heck, when you got real deer. I mean, I just watched a video this morning with, it's not whitetail, but it's regarding turkey, where Zach Fehrenbaugh from the Hunting Public, he killed his turkey, and the hen was a real life decoy, brought the tom into the shooting lane by, mm-hmm. Just naturally. And I heard Zach goes, can I take that shot? What do you think? And he's like, just wait, just if he gets in that opening. Next thing you know it, he gobbled right in that opening, left the head out, boom, yep. Zach blasted him. So it's just like, it's yep. just, you know, let nature obviously do its own decoying. But sometimes, man, you get those stubborn bucks, like you said, you could, who is this guy that's on my property right now? I got to go check this out. And you're doing yourself a nice little favor. And if you set it up right, man, you just had a lot of success, I'm sure.
Well, the thing too is like, is reading the animals, whether it's a turkey or a deer, you know, mm-hmm. and that is something you can learn when you're driving down the road or going to a park. A lot of times I'll just stop when I've got time. I'll stop and just watch them, mm-hmm. see how, and pay attention to the little things, the details of the details. When another deer comes in across the field, when they look up at them, you know, whenever another deer approaches them, or how are they working? Is one deer kind of leading? Is all the deer feeding the same direction in the field? And then taking some of that knowledge that you think when you're just going and sightseeing and looking at deer, whether it be on public ground or, you know, a reserve or whatever, it's still, you can still imply a lot of that, because if you remember that stuff, it is, you'll see a lot of commonalities whenever mm-hmm. you're sitting in a tree watching deer. And I have definitely use that to my advantage, just going out and watching and enjoying, you know, watching the deer, you know, not even on property to hunt, just watching deer where there's a high deer density and you can see them, noticing that, okay, all the deer are coming out this way. Do I necessarily want to be right there? Or whenever that deer comes, you'll see one of them start feeding one direction. And then as other deer, you see the rest of the deer, they gradually start to feed the same direction. So maybe I can be a lot safer, the deer are going to be a lot more settled down. I just let them feed and work mm-hmm. that direction versus getting super aggressive and jumping in right, trying to catch them right coming out, you know? Right. So really paying attention to that can make a difference of whether you're going to be able to, you know, watch them and let them get, because a lot of times, you know, when they first come into the field, they're on edge. You'll see a doe just kind of raising up just on edge yeah. and then finally get settled in. And then once she gets settled in, you'll see other deer start to come out. And it's almost like she's a scout, you know, and I'm a firm believer that they do have a lot of common patterns based upon how the wind's blowing and so on and so forth. And they will repeat that pattern if they're undisturbed. And if you can just don't get aggressive until you have to, just kind of inch in on them. And I know too, it can be tough because, you know, time, you know, people have lives, mm-hmm. Everybody wants to be out there as much, but sometimes you just can't because you got little ones, you got baseball games or soccer games and so goes right back to the decoys. Who wants to try to, you know, risk blowing their hunt, you know? And there's a lot of things that I've done that people will laugh and say, I can't believe that you got away with that. And part of it is because from watching deer, literally like yeah. a doe. When I've had a decoy out there, I've had does blow at it. I've had does sit there and stomp. You know, you get in that chest match where she's stomping. But if she blows three or four times, deer communicate with one another, and that's just one way they communicate. Some say that every single time they blow, it's like a, you know, hey, get away from here, or caution, caution. Well, a lot of times they're not. I've seen deer sit there and blow at each other in the field. So mm-hmm. in situations like that, I've had deer sit there and blow, and I'm like, well, crap, I'll blow back at her. And if anything, they're like, whoa, you know, it catches them off guard. And I'm not saying go blow at every deer if they do. What I'm saying is if you have that one that's out there, what's it going to hurt to try it? If you're worried about her running off, blow at her. Blow at her again, because I've had it several times to where they just stop and look, and then they just kind of go back to feeding. And then just like when they first enter the field. Once they get comfortable, they settle back down.
Yep. I like that, man. I that's all such good stuff. And I kind of, we'll stay in the same world of talking this. And Larry, something came to my mind, like while you were going through all that stuff. And that is, man, like I said, I really do respect you and I really look up to you in what you're doing. Who's been a big influence on you, like doing the things that you've been doing? Just because, man, like as a young middle 30, I'm 36 years old. I have two kids. I have the new baby and I've been with we've been married now. What will be 12 years. I think it's 12 going on this summer. You know, her and I had this conversation where when I teach health, I'm teaching the kids, like, it's all about experiences, right? The good, the bad, the ugly, they're just another notches on your belt. And as you just go through it, someone like yourself that's been through a lot, been through a lot of success and tough times, I'm sure, as well, who's someone that you looked up to that's helped you become like the person that you are in and out of the hunting world?
Man, I have to say, you know, my dad, my granddad, I mean, I've been my whole side of that family. I mean, they country is cornbread and raising blue tick hounds, going out and running coon hounds and just being involved in that. I mean, it didn't matter if it had four legs and a heartbeat, I was interested in trying to learn about it and see, whether it was a coon, a raccoon, or, you know, it didn't matter when I was growing up. So just, you know, growing to just love all of it, nature and respect, everything that it had to offer was vitally important. And they kind of instilled that to me. And then, you know, as I was getting older, evolving into, you know, archery and just, you know, where I was doing things more on my own, mm-hmm. you know, I got, you know, just meeting a lot of people that, and just not being afraid to go out and try to do it, you know? Mm-hmm. So my dad, my grandpa were big influences on it, you know, all the way up to when I got more into the industry, I started out, you know, with a show called Heartland Bowhunter, and me and another guy started that show. And we, it's obviously still going, still good buddies with all them. My stepbrother's Ty Easley, he's on that show still, and still talk to those guys a lot. But we, being able to document it behind the lens brought a whole nother level of it to us. Cause now I could go back and watch it. And I could see, man, and stuff that you just don't capture in the moment. But when you go back and watch, it's plain as day. And so being able to go back and watch some of those with my stepbrother and starting that show was vitally to really, it just, you know, my passion getting even stronger and stronger. So through that, you know, we built a tree arm for production with Heartland Bowhunter years ago. And we went to our first ATA show, and I'll never forget, we had a 10 by 10 booth. And I mean, I was standing on that concrete floor. My legs looked like tree trunks. And I'm just talking to people. Well, Philip Vanderpool and the HS guys and the Primos guys, they came over, was talking, and they started, they were interested in our tree arms. And just as we start to do, you know, started talking to them more and more, it was just like, man, I was just soaking it all in and learning as much as I could and trying new things and going out there and realizing that, man, you know, really, you just got to, all you have to, you know, go out and communicate. If you have a question, ask it. That's why I tell everybody, you know, if they do have a question, I feel like I can help, send me a message on social media, send Respect to Game TV a message or whatever. I ain't afraid to answer anything. If I can help somebody, I'm going to let them know, you know, what I think is, you know, hey, this is what's worked for me. At the end of the day though, we're going after wild animals, you know? So yeah. Sometimes there's gotta be a little luck involved too, you know?
Exactly. Now I love that message just because it's warm hearted knowing like the hard work that you put in throughout these years. And, you know, obviously with Respect to Game now, it's you and a couple buddies and along those lines doing it, and you have 10 seasons. How long have you been doing that with Respect to Game?
We're actually going to be filming this spring, starting this spring, our 14th season.
Wow.
The season that's airing now, season 13. So we've gotten a lot better. Kind of, it's taken us a little bit to get in the groove as far as keeping up with the times and all the ways of getting content shot and out there. But our team's great. Ryan and Paul, they're great editors, great producers, and got a great eye behind the lens. And that's as well. And they're just as passionate about it as I am. And everybody else, which makes it even better, because I'm the first guy there. I was like, man, you're like a little girl when we shoot something, and you know, I'm like, I'll jump up, pick them up, because it generally, I mean, it's
that's
just
the beauty of it.
Yeah, exactly. I love to be there. One of my favorite pictures is that we've ever taken in the show was we were actually all on a hunt together in Nebraska, and we were spot stalking mule deer hunt and the sand hills, and Paul was hunting, and we were just kind of going out trying to glass. We seen a good, nice whitetail out just out in the prairie by itself. So, and we put together a plan, and spot, you know, got up there, spot and stalked it, and Paul's able to get a shot off. But there's a picture that they have, you'll probably see on our page, where we're all just kind of around that deer high-fiving. And I look at that and I'm like, man, that's to me, that's what it's all about.
So, you could probably
feel, that's what I said I'm gonna see that too.
Yeah, you could feel, smell, and just still put yourself in that moment probably when you look at that photo.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. And it was just, to me, it was just so awesome. Number one, to do it that way, and two, to do it with buddies that you work with is awesome. And I love it all. Like I said, even the times where it's not, people say, yo, I love to spot and stalk. And I always tell them, I was like, well, people only call it spot and stalk when it works. I said, you're spotting and scooping majority of the time. You're spotting and scooping majority of the time.
Said, exactly.
It's always spot and stalk when it works.
Yep, exactly. So from starting that with Heartland Bowhunter and doing along those, and then doing all the different things that you do for Respect to Game and obviously for the outdoor group, we've come a long way, right? As far as technology with cameras and just social media, obviously. Man, I had a conversation with somebody. It's all about perspective too, the way you look at it, but I'm sure just because of how much fun the last 4.5 years since I've started doing this, how much more fun I've had with certain pieces of equipment that, you know, whether it be certain cameras and lenses, how much more fun I've had growing and developing and getting in on this, just because I'm self-taught. I had zero background with cameras and anything along those lines, especially from college. I was just a, you know, typical baseball player who I wanted to be a phys ed teacher and coach, right? And do along those lines. I had nothing as far as, let me pick up a camera. I always enjoyed great movies and respected all that type of stuff. So I kind of had a creative mind, I guess you could kind of say. I just needed to have that piece of equipment. And it's evolved. Man, for you, how much more fun is it now compared to when you were just starting out?
We had the whole thing too with me is starting off, it was one of those things where watching other hunts and watching ourselves hunt, I was like, just being able to tell a story without saying a word, letting people perceive that hunt the way that they wanted to perceive it, not, hey, this is how I want you to see it. Right. And I think that starting Heartland Bowhunter, they do a phenomenal job of it. And we've kind of gravitated that route too. It's just us going out there hunting, because everybody, you know, content is subjective. It really is. What, you know, some people may like this style, some people may like that style. I truly do like it all if it comes to it. If that's what, you know, whether it be not just based on what equipment, but just going after and trying to capture it. And because even us having a television show, I mean, there's some hunts that are going to unfold better than others. And we still have to tell that story. And it's so in order to do that, you got to have the camera running. And versus me coming on there and showing a hunt and then me coming back and, you know, maybe doing a, what we call spines, where it's like, I'm telling you kind of what you're about ready to watch versus just letting you watch it, interpret it yourself. Or in a lot of cases, they tell you what you just watched and, instead of moving on. And I'm not knocking that style or that form at all, because it works a lot. We just want to bring something a little bit different to the table and not that it's different, but I feel like it gives us the means to be creative, right. You know, a lot more creative to show some of those shots and some of what we're seeing out there. Cause having a show and being able to go some of the places we go, you get to, you know, I appreciate, and you know, all of those great experiences and being able to see, you know, a buck breed a doe or a bobcat, you know, grab a squirrel and chasing a squirrel around stuff. That's to me, that made my whole hunt. I may not have seen a deer the whole, you know, that whole set, but just being able to see that, I mean, I'll come back and I'll tell everybody at camp about it until they're, you know, they're tired of hearing about it. But just because, well, I generally get pumped up about it.
Yeah, no doubt about it. I love that. Just again, I think we've made some pretty cool, and like you, I love that you said it's all how you interpret it, right? How you, how you digest it, and you like what you like. And the other aspect that I've, over the last like 2 years, what I've really have grown to love and respect is really just the people that put in the time to really put something forward, even if it's not my cup of tea, even if it's something that I may, you know, it may not be my favorite way to consume that, But man, there's a lot of effort that goes in behind the scenes to make that possible. And that's the other aspect, that it's just, I respect the heck out of it. And no matter what you're doing, I give you a thumbs up, or, you know, not just you, Larry, but just anybody out there that's listening that has made something. It's a lot of time and effort that goes into it. And I love to what you said, tell a story without actually telling the story. Some of those are the most powerful videos, digesting of some form of content, whether it's hunting or not hunting. Those are some of the mm-hmm. most powerful type of videos out there. I agree with you on that.
Yeah. The other thing too is let's just face it, today's world with social media, you also open up to a lot of negativity and stuff like that. You got to keep that to yourself. Be positive about it. I mean, those positive experiences. If you see someone else have that positive experience, you know, if you comment on, tell them that was awesome, because it truly was. And a lot of people I see kind of fearing with the social media of whether they want to engage in something or ask a question. Well, send a DM or do whatever, because we're not those guys at all. And you know, we have it, you know, and every show they have that negativity and stuff. We just stay away from it. You know, keep your chin up, keep going, because you're going to be successful. You're going to fail. When you fail, just get right back up. You know, it's going to keep, just keep after it. It's going to happen. Whether it's your first, you know, you're trying to harvest your first deer with a bow, or first turkey with a bow, or whatever it may be. I mean, it may be a doe. I'm still going to be jacked up about it. It doesn't matter, because you just accomplished something. You set a goal, you went out and got it. And okay, so now let's do that again, you know, and just keep getting better and better and better. And that's kind of how I've kind of moved through the industry as well, as far as, and it's been working out. I just love to hear stories from other people too, because we have a show, but I can tell you right now, I mean, I try to learn every time I go out there, and if I'm going to listen to someone else's story, and I'm going to ask a question to them, you know, well, why did you do that or whatever? Because man, that just seemed a little bit odd, and boom, learn something right there from it. And we're all hunters at heart. The only difference is, you know, I've got somebody, you know, either filming or you know, or I'm filming somebody, but we're out there. So, but there's no difference. I mean, there's been several deer that if you were in that tree, you would have shot the same deer. You know what I mean? Yep. So it's just a matter of us being able to share the story, do it tactfully, and let you perceive that whole story how you want.
Yep. So the one aspect that I love, just because obviously for the short amount of times that you and I had the pleasure of actually communicating on the phone, whether it be even also too in meetings or anything along those lines on a computer, the one aspect that I love is how much you guys love archery. Just because, mm-hmm. man, archery to me is, as a young kid, the first bow I got, man, I could not tell you how excited I was to finally get my first quote unquote real bow as a young boy, when I was going into the archery shop with my dad. And when I got my first one, and it always was a piece of me, and I love archery. There's just something I can't just, you know, I can't say it enough. And it's one thing that it's so cool to see that you guys are so passionate about it. And I love it, you know, and I watched that video of your turkey hunt. It was in Texas. Was it last year with, mm-hmm. with the double kill? Dude, that was so freaking cool to see that. And I like that. So when you look back at some of these awesome hunts, and like you said, you're about to be filming season 14, man, what are some of those, when you look at it, if I sit there and say, what is your most memorable hunt? What comes to your mind?
Probably, I'm going to say, I remember all of them, to be honest with you, but probably one of my favorite and most memorable was Argentina Red Stag.
Okay.
And it was on a trip on a whim. We had the opportunity to go, went down there. I think more of it was just because it was you're free range stag hunting, you're getting after it, and you're trying to find them and go get them. But more importantly, it was just seeing a different culture, just the people and how much they appreciated their land. They were conservationists. Everything that we ate when we were down there was all organic. It was just, you know, seeing that different culture and going out and to experience and navigate their land, and the way just made me want to go out there and you know, because they were generally wanting to try to get on a stag and stuff. And it wasn't like it wasn't an easy hunt. I mean, right. I blew a lot of stocks, you know, we spot spooked a lot.
Yep.
and then finally got one to come together, but it was just a really cool hunt just because, like I said, to experience the people and you know, that culture along with it. But outside of here is probably, you know, obviously my first bow elk was ways of my mind and really I took a liking to calling elk and figuring them out as well. And then you never forget your first bow kill, you know, whether it's a doe or mine would just happen to be like a little bitty old 5-point like this, but I still have his rack in the, you know, in the garage. And I remember like it was yesterday.
That's awesome. What's a hunt maybe that you do every year that you just always look forward to doing or that you would like to get back to every year?
Honestly, hunting more at home. I put a lot of work into some of the properties that we do at home and making the time to spend it here with whether it's, you know, hunting myself or taking someone else or whatever on the farm. I love seeing other people be successful and sometimes schedules don't allow for that. And so if there's one thing, I think, you know, being able to hunt with buddies and family and taking somebody hunting, I think to me, that's what it's all about. I love to be there and experience that with somebody. That's the other great thing about the show is because, well, we got a camera guy or whatever. I mean, and Ryan, he's the worst because he's like, no, I'm going to film you all the time. I'm going to film you. So there's been times like we'll go down to my farm and I'll say, hey, let's just meet down there at the farm. Just bring your bow and I'll do that. And I'll leave my bow at home. And I'll be like, well, you got to hunt now.
Yep, so, exactly.
And so I just love the experience.
Yeah, I like that. What's the plans for this spring? What about this spring?
This spring, so we're working going down to Texas. We've got Kansas, and then we're probably going to just make a run through the Midwest. And then I think we end off in May in Pennsylvania.
Nice.
So,
well, there you go.
So Paul will be hunting in Oklahoma. We'll have Texas. We have, you know, Kansas, which Kansas just went to a draw. So I was fortunate enough to draw a tag there. And then home state of Missouri, Ohio, Kansas, or Ohio and Pennsylvania.
Nice. Two states I'll be hitting up, Ohio and obviously my home state in Pennsylvania. So that'll be awesome. That'll be exciting. It's so, you know, it's wonderful for someone like you that has the luxury of being able to go film and do a hunt along the lines of that, because you could go early season to some of these states, you know, go enjoy those times. And then 6.5 weeks later, turkey season is just getting kicking off here in the state of Pennsylvania by the time we're recording this. So, man, it's wild to think of how vastly different some of these seasons are. Obviously, Florida's starting right now along those lines, but here in Pennsylvania, we don't start for another 6.5 weeks. Like, that's just crazy and wild, and what you're able to experience as a turkey hunter if you have the chance to go out and travel a lot.
Yeah, because last year, when that hunt you're referring to in Texas, I was at the same place. I mean, literally, I think 4 weeks prior to that, like I'd shot a buck down there. And then 4 weeks I was back down there, I was turkey hunting. And I was you hear people say it felt like deer season just ended. Well, that year, last year, it really did.
It really did.
Yeah, it really did. So it was kind of odd. But like I said, it is good. Now, I will say, you know, hunting the Merriams and stuff early, that can be rough just because they usually flocked up. And I like to wait a little bit, me personally, just because let them get split up, because I've had some pretty tough hunts on turkeys because you can call till you're out of breath and all they're doing is just following the leader. You know, you pretty much have to sit up and try to deer hunt them and hope they walk by.
Yep. So we're just talking about how much archery means to us and how much we love it. What's your current bow setup that you'll be taking on these spring turkey hunts?
Right now, I'm gonna stick to my same bow setup. I'm gonna be shooting the Ethos. I've got it in Midnight Copper, And yeah, I've got a CBE Trek 2V on it, and I'm just going to set it up. I actually took a turn out of it just to lower the poundage just a little bit. Yeah, so I'm going to probably shoot that all spring as well. And I'm one of those guys too. I want to, once I get comfortable with that setup, I mean, I want to be able to go hunt anything with it. And yeah. So it's, but that's going to be my rig this spring is that Ethos, and it treated me well this fall. So I'm hoping it's going to do the same this spring.
How much, cause I know you shot the Era, and that was my main whitetail rig mm-hmm. this past year. And that was my first carbon bow. That was my first carbon. And, I'll tell you what, Larry, that bow, it brought me so much luck. Like we were just saying, right? We deer hunting is all about, you know, learning and growing and certain skill sets, but then a little bit of luck. And I had a lot of luck with 5 deer in like 3.5 weeks here in the state of PA. And I'm just like, this freaking Era. Every time I shot, it was like, my gosh, here we go. First one with the Era. 6 days later, I'm like, here we go. This Era is bringing me luck. And then literally the next week, I'm like, holy hell. And then the next week, there's a buck and a doe. Right. You know, it was awesome, man. I thought it was a very successful first year for Elite with the Era. I would assume you would agree with that.
100%. I mean, the Era is just an awesome all around rig. And I was not really partial to a carbon bow. Not that I had a ton of experience with mm-hmm. a carbon bow, but I figured I like a bow that has a little weight on it just because my pin likes to float a lot. And I figured, so I'll put a little bit of weight on it to get that pin to settle down. Mm-hmm. But that bow, it was a carbon bow that held so good. Like aluminum bow. And once you got it tricked out, it was like, man, this thing is a shooter. And so I really, 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 and I still have my arrows out there, and trust me, I can pick it up right now and not think twice about it. This Ethos is a really, really efficient, and just, it's one of those bows that kind of corrects like my mistakes.
Yeah.
You know, I can like break off a bad shot and be like, man, that felt horrible. Like we all yep. do. I mean, a lot of people won't admit it, but yeah, it's like, man, that felt horrible. You know, that didn't feel like it was close. But then when you walk down there, it's like your arrow's right in the dot. You know, it's like how that happened. It's just that bow, you know, to me. So I've been gravitating towards it. And, you know, one thing I will address while we're on here is I get a lot of questions about the Ethos and the Cairo. So to bring up the Cairo, that bow was built for a lot of bow hunters. One of the most common draw lengths all the way from the 26 to 28 and a half inch guy.
Yep.
Yeah. So that bow is the same bow as an Ethos, just has a different engine. The cams are different. It has a little bit smaller cam on there, but the reason for that, because at those draw lengths I just mentioned, you're utilizing more of the cam, so therefore the bow is going to be more efficient. Mm-hmm. And so if you're a 28 and a half inch guy and you're thinking, hey, Ethos, Kairos, you really probably should look at the Cairo. The reason why is it's going to be really, really efficient, and you're probably going to maintain the same speeds with more efficiency, meaning the bow's probably going to be a little quieter. It's going to just perform a little bit better for you, in my opinion, because I know with the Ethos, you've got to adjust the mod. And when you do, you know, some of the strings leaving the cam early, you're getting more, mm-hmm. you're not getting as much rotation or more rotation without the string on the cam. And with the Cairo, you're going to have more string on there. So therefore more efficiency and more energy is leaving through your arrow.
Yeah, I like that. That's all really good information. That's really why I leaned towards the Cairo's bow this year, just because of my draw length, because I could kind of mm-hmm. fluctuate between a 27 and a half to 28. And I was like, well, mm-hmm. regardless where I'm going to be with that string angle, mm-hmm. that will be the bow that will be most efficient for myself. And it's funny you brought about, you know, when you have that one bad shot. So today I shot a bunch of arrows, and I was starting to call some shots. I was calling top, bottom, and calling a 14 and all that stuff. And my last arrow was a 14. I was like, okay, we got to make this one count. This is it. And as I'm drawing, I'm pulling, I had a surprise shot. Like I did it to myself, and I was like, ooh. And I put up my binos. I'm like, when I looked and I saw my fletching, I'm like, that looks still though pretty good. I'm around it. And like you said, it was actually just boom, dead center in that 14. I was like, well, yeah, they trust your pin float, right? That's the one aspect, right? That's the aspect.
I call it drive behind. You know, a lot of times you'll be sitting there and that pin will be like that. As soon as it gets closer, like whack, you know, and just let it rip. So it's a, you know, you try not to do it. I mean, and you know, but we're all human, and let's just face it. I mean, you're going to break off bad shots, and why not have a bow that kind of, you know, that helps correct your mistakes, I guess.
Exactly. You know,
so that's why I kind of grabbed the bow.
I think that error, going back to that error though, if you are looking for like the one all be all type of hunting rig, and if you want something light in the hand, if you're depending on where you're hiking, and like even Larry said, you could even deck it out with certain weight to get it balanced the way that you want to balance. And I understand the purpose of having a light bow is to keep it light. But like for me, for whitetail, I did, right? So I ran it last year during like just local 3D type stuff, and I had a back bar on it. But once hunting season rolled around, I took that off. I was like, let me be light as possible. Let me be efficient. And like you said, I actually took it out the other day just to shoot it, just to see. I'm like, man, I haven't shot this since I got the Kairos bow. So I'm like, let me just see. Boom, it's still on. It's still right there. I checked the timing and everything like that. And that is a great bow. As somebody asked me, I was like, I will never get rid of that arrow bow until 4 or 5 years from now when Elite makes the next greatest one. So that'll be it for me.
That's the one thing too that I love about Elite as a brand and the people is, you said it earlier, I mean, we love archery, and the campaign, you know, to go take the shootability challenge, that whole campaign was really based upon not saying, hey, yeah, of course it's saying go shoot an Elite, but what we're really saying is this: make sure you're comfortable when you're shooting. Go take the shootability challenge. All we're asking for is, hey, you know, let Elite be part of that conversation, you know, because if you're not comfortable, you're not going to shoot good. So, and you may be comfortable with another brand, that's fine, but be comfortable. We want to see success stories. Who doesn't like success stories? And so regardless of whether it's our brand, all we're saying is, hey, you know, just let us be part of that conversation. You know, pick one up, shoot it. If you like another one better than that, so be it. That's great. The main thing is get out there and enjoy the outdoors, go enjoy archery, you know, and, you know, have fun doing it. That's what that campaign is. It's not too evolved. A lot of people look too deep into it, but that's ultimately what it is. Just let's be part of the conversation. That's it.
Yep. Amen. I like that, Larry. Larry, man, I greatly appreciate you taking this time out to speak with me tonight. And man, just like you said, I could honestly say Larry's not lying when he says just to message him, when he says just to, if you have a question about anything along those lines, because he's been extremely helpful for myself. We're excited to work together on a little project that hopefully we'll be able to announce here pretty soon. And I have some things lined up that I'm really thrilled about. It really means a lot to me personally. And to have someone like Larry kind of to be in a huge, gigantic influence behind it, I can't thank him more enough. And, you know, I thank you for your time, Larry. Where could people find you, follow along with what you have going on?
Well, obviously you can, all of our social media handles at Respect the Game TV. My personal is Larry McCoy 15 on Instagram, or Larry McCoy on Facebook. And like I said, if anybody has any questions, I mean, feel free to ask, whether it's decoying deer, set up for turkey, it doesn't matter. It could be a bow question. Doesn't matter what bow brand it is. If you have a question, I'll do my best to answer. If I don't know an answer, I'll see if I know somebody that does. We'll get you an answer one way or another.
Awesome, Larry. Well, thank you everybody for tuning in this week. Definitely go check out Respect the Game. Check out what Larry's doing. Wonderful individual. Thanks again, everybody, for tuning in. We'll see you next week, and antler up.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Antler Up podcast. We hope you enjoyed it. Please go check us out on our Instagram, YouTube, Facebook, and Go Wild, and at antlerupoutdoors.com. If you enjoyed this episode, go leave a review and subscribe for next week's episode. Until then, Antler Up.